It was a very solid performance. It was really kind of reminiscent for me of Ryan Shazier's first home preseason game a number of years ago in terms of production and getting around and making a number of plays.
Mike Tomlin right there, Steelers head coach, evaluating his first-round draft pick, Devin Bush's first foray onto an NFL field, wearing an NFL uniform, playing nominally an NFL game, albeit a preseason one. It's the PM team, and you can text us on the Edgar Snyder & Associates fan text line at 412-928-9370. Edgar Snyder reminds you to text responsibly, and the associates do as well. Andrew Filippone out all week. I, Chris Muller, in tomorrow for the Permane Brothers World Tour. Who joins me on the show as a co-host? Paul Zeiss. Impressive that Jermichael had that one ready, because I didn't really give him much of a setup for that. And probably not all that surprising that Mike Tomlin invoked the name of Ryan Shazier when talking about Devin Bush, because let's be honest, if Ryan Shazier had not had a tragic injury that looks like it's going to, realistically speaking, he can say what he wants, but it looks like it's going to be career-ending. If he had not had that injury, Devin Bush would not be here. He was drafted to be Ryan Shazier 2.0. He was drafted to replace him. He will be expected to do all the things Ryan Shazier did, possibly better. And I think a lot of people, not just his head coach, are going to evaluate him as such. Is he going to do Ryan Shazier things? If so, it's a success. People are going to hold up, hey, would Ryan Shazier have made this play? And Devin Bush did fly around the field, it looked like, I thought. There was the impressive third and fourth down sequence where he tracked somebody down on third down, then he helped make the stop on fourth down. He undercut a route, and but for the ball hitting him in the face mask, would have had an interception, the kind of play I think people salivate over. He did still get beat, though. A ball got thrown over the top on him. And I think even his most effusive fan, or his most effusive backer, I'm sure Mike Tomlin would do this, but even the people the most excited about Devin Bush would probably tell you there's a long, long, long way to go here. But it's very obvious when you hear Steelers fans talk about Devin Bush that they feel the potential exists for big things, like team-changing levels of production. And the last time they traded up anywhere near this many spots to get a player in the first round on the defensive side of the ball, was Troy Polamalu, and he did change their defense. The last time they traded up in the first round before this period was Santonio Holmes, and he too made a difference. That whole Super Bowl MVP thing, pretty nice. Good ROI there. Here's where I get to my pump the brakes point, though, with Devin Bush. It feels, from a narrative standpoint, as far as not so much what the team is pushing, because they have done their usual almost humorous conservative outlook on Devin Bush. Well, we hope he'll learn, blah, blah, blah. Everyone knows that he's going to be the starter day one, unless something really bad happens between now and then. He's going to start, and then whoever, and it should be Mark Barron, whoever of those two, Mark Barron and Vince Williams, will occupy the other spot. They're all going to play, but it should be Barron and Bush as the two main ones. The narrative seems to be out there that he's going to start, and that he's going to be transformative, and that, snap your fingers, Steelers defense, the one that was 6th in yards but only 16th in points allowed because they didn't force enough turnovers, is going to go from, frankly, pedestrian to dynamic. And essentially it's going to be because you're putting one guy in one place and there's going to be a massive trickle down. And honestly, I don't see it. And it's not a discredit or a knock against Devin Bush, but how many players in football, right? How many positions on the field, I should say, allow for if you put in one great player, everybody else gets a lot better? How many are there? I can name one. Quarterback. That's it. As great as Troy Polamalu was, he had a very good to great defense around him. The guys he played with were awesome. If they weren't, he would have been a really good safety on a who-knows defense. And if you don't believe me, by the way, go look to the gold standard. When you look at inside or middle linebackers. So we'll lump in both sort of base defenses, although now that whole thing gets kind of muddled. But if you look at interior linebackers, where the platonic ideal for the position is you're good, you're at least competent to borderline good in coverage, you're a sure tackler, you're an instinctive downhill player, but one who can drop back. You're a do-it-all, jack-of-all-trades, right? Who's the gold standard right this second in the NFL? I will wait. You can show your work. Luke Kuechly, right? That's the first name that probably popped to your mind. You're thinking inside linebackers right now. Are you not thinking of Luke Kuechly? When I'm asking, word association, hey, great inside backer, Luke Kuechly. You want to know what the Panthers defense ranked last year with Luke Kuechly in the middle of it? 19th in points allowed, 15th in yards allowed. I'm not a math wizard. Those are both worse than the Steelers. Does that mean that Luke Kuechly wasn't actually that good? No, he was an all-pro again. It means that that position, much like every other non-quarterback position, is very tough from an inside backer's spot. It's very tough to dramatically influence every other player. Polamalu couldn't do it. He had good players around him. He made everybody better, but he had good players around him. Kuechly can't do it for the Panthers. He's the best in the league at his position. He's the guy everyone's measured against. He couldn't do it. Devin Bush could be awesome. He could be as advertised and then some. And the Steelers could be better on defense, but if they're going to be, it's not going to be because he steps in, starts from day one, is dynamic, and everything else just falls into place. Believe me, that scenario I'm laying out would help a lot. But that's not the reason that they would, that's not the sole reason. He can't affect that much. He can chase down plays. That third down, fourth down sequence was probably the most telling thing. He can help clean up a mess on a pass that might have otherwise gone for a first down. He can have a big stick on a fourth down like that of the running back. But if you really want to get to the bottom of what would make the Steelers better defensively this year, I think it's way too easy to try to say, oh, it's Devin Bush, and if he's good, then they're going to be good. It's Bud Dupree. What do you get out of him? It's Sean Davis. What is he at free safety? It's Terrell Edmonds. It's Mark Barron. It's who's playing corner opposite Joe Hayden on any given day? And I'm just taking things if everyone's fully healthy. I feel like because everyone has so desperately wanted there to be a quick fix for what ails the Steelers, and so much blame or excuse, not excuse making, but so much of what went wrong with their defense the last couple years has been traced to Ryan Shazier's injury, maybe not without merit, that people want to believe that if you find somebody whose skill set resembles Shazier's, whose ability to go sideline to sideline and make tackles and make plays resembles Shazier's, if you plug that person in, and now the Steelers have him, at least on paper, everything's going to be fine. That is a very convenient way to look at defensive improvement, is it not? All we needed was an inside linebacker. Hey, looky, an inside linebacker. Whee! Everything's going to be good. It's not how it works. I get the excitement about Devin Bush. I thought he was good in that first preseason game. Maybe not great, but good. And I'm not a huge fan of some of Mike Tomlin's cliche-ridden phrases, but the whole idea of the moment not looking too big for Devin Bush, of Devin Bush just appearing to kind of fit the part of, I'm going out there, there's going to be nerves, but I'm going to play. I'm going to get downhill and start playing football. I thought he checked boxes in that department. Justin Lane, just as a counter, did not. Looked like it was a little too big for him. And Mike Tomlin said as much. But looking like you belong and even playing well at one position on defense does not mean that you are transformative for a team. Now, what would be transformative for the Steelers is this. Devin Bush starts week one, is as advertised. Mark Barron is just a better, more versatile player alongside him, and the utility they have for Vince Williams is limited. Vince Williams, good guy in that room by all accounts, Vince, but not the guy you want on the field in a lot of situations in the modern NFL where teams are passing it more. He's a liability. He's a run stuffer. He's a hitter. He's a downhill player. Put the stick on at the line of scrimmage, and that's what he does. Barron needs to be really good. You know what else would help him? How about a year two leap from Terrell Edmonds, where he's flying around, not having to think as much and making plays? How about Bud Dupree does what's best for both him and for the Steelers? Has like a 10 or 11 sack season opposite TJ Watt. Best for him because then he can go and some other team can pay him. Best for the Steelers because they get the production and probably have seen enough, frankly, before this to know we're not paying premium price for Bud Dupree. It's not one guy. And I've gotten the sense, because people want it so badly to be a one-man fix, that they have gravitated towards that. And I would say you got to pump the brakes on it. Because I think that's unfair to Devin Bush. What if he's really good and their defense is about what it was last year scoring-wise? Is it, if he has an objectively good season, it's not his fault. I'm also trying to help people like not have a letdown here either. Just saying. Coming up, every time I talk Steelers, you know what I'm going to do next, right? Talk Cleveland Browns for a minute or two. There has been yet another show of respect for the Cleveland Browns, and it's coming from the dreaded national portion of the media. I'll tell you who's given the Browns a lot of credit and in what way they're showing it. Coming up next on The Fan. Follow us on Twitter at 93.7 The Fan. It's driven by Shorkey Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Locations in North Huntington and the North Hills. I do love when I get the tweets. What would everybody agree? Are we all... I'll trail off once in a while and just have like a loose dangling end of a conversation thread, a topic thread, once in a while. But I like to think I tend to zip the conversations up nicely, tie a bow around them, right? What would you say was the thrust of the top of the hour segment? Devin Bush could and might well be very good, but it won't be enough by himself a good season to save the Steelers' defense or transform it, right? And then I brought up the fact that, like, you know, Luke Kuechly, the best inside backer in the NFL, couldn't save the Panthers last year from being 19th in scoring defense, 15th in yards. Both were worse than the Steelers, right? That was fairly clear, was it not? I will give you an example of two ways to approach what I said. There's the good way on Twitter and the bad way. Would you like to hear the good way or the bad way first? Bad way? No, let's go good way first. Let's see. We had the A Main podcast tweet me and say, how do you explain then Khalil Mack's importance to the Bears defense? Without him, that team wasn't making the playoffs last year. They went from 10th overall in points to first. They're the best defense in the league. Great point. Except Khalil Mack wasn't a rookie. He was an established star. And as I just said, they were 10th. They were already pretty good without him. And you know what else they had? He plays a position that I would argue, because its whole goal is to put pressure on the quarterback, probably lends itself to being more of a turnover-creating position. That's why I keep mentioning Bud Dupree. And then they have Eddie Jackson, who was a turnover machine in the secondary, if memory serves. Ah. So that was the good way, though, because I responded basically as such on Twitter, because I like to respond. And the person said, you know what? I got to throw a touche your way. Fair point. Okay. I've been hit with good points before, and I like to think I'll give a touche back. That's how you do a good job. Now, here's how you do a bad job of responding to that little critique or that little Devin Bush segment. Yinzer Bob, at Bob Yinzer. Real good follow here. Chris Muller, PGH, wants the Steelers to have a bad player at inside linebacker. What the hell is he talking about? Now, I pointed out to Bob Yinzer that the segment was Devin Bush had a good debut, could be really good, and it won't be enough by himself. It won't be enough by himself to save the Steelers' defense. His response was, in fact, move to Cleveland. Thought about it. Buy me a house out there. What if he bought me a house and I just moved to Cleveland and still did the show here, just to troll him? Like, they took up a collection. Hey, we sent you out of here. All right, I'll move there. You paid for the house. Buy the house in full. And just drove 2 hours. Yeah, I'm just in Cleveland, you know, living there, doing the show here. Among my people. So that's the good and the bad way to do this. Just saying. Speaking of the Browns, another show of respect for the Cleve Brownies. Are you ready for this? It's going to hurt. It's going to sting. Now, the Steelers are playing a very high-profile game to start their season. Steelers-Patriots. Prime time, baby. Sunday night football. That's as good as it gets. That's the big game. So the Steelers are still being respected. Cleveland Browns are playing a 1 o'clock game on September 8th against the Tennessee Titans. That's a CBS crew. Who are they getting? They're getting Nance and Romo. Hello, friends. Pleasant good afternoon. That would actually be a Lanny for Terry. But they're getting Nance and Romo, baby. That's the A crew for the A team. That's what you get when you're the favorite in the AFC North, the betting favorite. Let's all, I mean, I love to give everyone crap about the Browns because it gets people mad. But I also, I mean, I genuinely believe that they are going to be good. I feel like the undercurrent here that people have to take seriously is the thing where they have a lot of talent. And if they don't completely screw it up, they should be very good this year. That's a legitimate sort of showing that TV thinks they're going to be worth covering. Isn't it jarring, too, to see, like, to hear me say that? Yeah, CBS is sending their A team, the number one crew, Nance and Romo, for the Browns season opener. That was for years a Spiro Ditas game, right? You're not even getting Ian Eagle and Dan Fouts for that game. That's a Spiro Ditas and who's, what was it, Rich Gannon throwing down on that crew, I believe? Adam Archuleta, says Jermichael. You weren't getting Nance and Romo for that. Oh, no. You were going way down the line for that crew. What are some other, like, C and D team crews? I can't. Ian Eagle's actually, like, I think he and Fouts do a good broadcast. And, oh, yes. That was an Andrew Catalan special. See, Greg Gumbel doesn't deserve this. He doesn't deserve to be lumped in with the Andrew Catalans of the world, all of these people, it should go without saying, have accomplished more in their lives than I ever will already. But the Browns used to be an Andrew Catalan team. Now they're a Nance and Romo team. From the outhouse to the penthouse, baby. Is it also not extremely weird to see the Cleveland Browns schedule and see not one, not two, not even three, but in fact, four primetime games? They've got a couple 405, 425s. They've got Browns 25, Browns Steelers 425. They've got 820 Steelers on Thursday night. They've got an 820 game with the Rams. They've got the 815er with the 49ers. I might have actually miscounted that because the screen is going all wonky on me, but you get the idea. A bunch of primetime games and a bunch of those national late games in the afternoon for the Cleveland Browns. I don't know why. I understand why people like are mad at me for this. But isn't it going to be more fun just being able to watch them? And do you realize if they blow up in a bad way, in spectacular fashion, how gratifying that will be for people? If you're a Steelers fan and they start like 0-4, the Browns, Mayfield's cussing out teammates, Beckham's already saying, I hate it here, there's nothing to do, the Flats looks like a Scooby-Doo ghost town, stuff like that, do you know how happy you're going to be? I don't know if people have paused to consider the idea that maybe this actually will work out in people's favor. In this town, specifically. Anyway, Nance Romo. Do you think they'll let Romo completely back out in doing the thing where he just predicts every play this year? I miss that version of Romo. He only, like, trotted it out on special occasions last year. AFC title game, he just starts calling plays before they happen. Why can't they just let Tony Romo breathe? Why can't they let him spread his wings and just say, screw it, guys, I know exactly what's going to happen here. My big thing with that, by the way, is if Tony Romo was so good at diagnosing plays, how on earth was he not a better NFL quarterback? And he was pretty damn good, I'll be honest. He was pretty good. And I get that there's a physical component to things. My goodness, the guy knows every play before it happens. You would have thought as a quarterback, he would have just been like picking people apart. Apparently not. Hey, here's something you can do. Join the PM team. That would be us on the Primanti Brothers World Tour. You grab your passport at any of the locations when we are there, the PM team. Get it stamped at least 4 locations for your chance to win a trip to Florida. Visit 93.7 The Fan's contest page for the dates, the locations, all the details. I'll be there tomorrow. Primanti's in Moon Township, I believe, with Paul Zeiss. So get out there and come and see us, all right? Up next, Neil Huntington on his weekly radio show this past weekend. He seems like a man dejected, almost contrite, and I could hear him talk, and I wanted to not sympathize with him. I wanted to say, all right, he struck all the right notes here. But as I listened to more of what Neil Huntington had to say, I simply couldn't. We'll hear a little bit of it, and I'll tell you what I thought coming out of it next.
Obviously, it's been one of the toughest stretches I can remember being a part of. Even the 105 loss season, it didn't feel like we had a stretch like this. And when you're expecting to win and believe you can win and don't, that it is much harder. Players in the field maybe not have enough talent because of the players that I've put on that field. Maybe we're not teaching them the way we can or need to. Maybe they're just simply not executing. So it's a combination of the players I put on the field, the work we're doing with them, and then how the work that the players are getting done. And we recognize that our decision-making process needs to go through a thorough review.
I think we're well past the point of just a thorough review. If you're Neil Huntington, and that was Huntington on his weekly radio show heard right here on 93.7 The Fan, your flagship home for Pirates baseball. If you're Neil Huntington, aren't you doing more than just a thorough review here? Aren't heads rolling? That second clip, he basically says, now maybe some of it's the guys we're drafting. And then maybe some of it's the way we're bringing those guys we drafted along. And then maybe it's just the way some of those guys, when they actually get here, are playing. Does that not all, is that not like in line going Delacari, Broadway, Hurdle? And me? Because all of those guys answer to me? How is that? A thorough review has been, we hit thorough review point when they were about whatever in 10, right? After the All-Star break, like a 2-10 run, whatever that was. That was thorough review time, maybe. Probably even earlier than that. Heads need to roll. Neil Huntington, and I listened to the majority of that show, he struck a tone that was genuinely frustrated. And full disclosure, every time I've talked to the guy, like about shop baseball, talking shop, or talking just regularly like normal human beings, I like Neil Huntington. I do. I think he is a smart guy when it comes to baseball. I think he is a guy who is doing not a great job right now, but has done a great job with very strict constraints placed on him in previous years. I like him. I want him to succeed. But some of the things I hear him say, like almost a verbal throwing up of the hands right there, like, oh, what do you expect? I mean, we're not drafting the right guys, maybe. We're not developing them the right way, and then they're not playing that well when they get here. No, not good enough. One of the things that would actually be very heartening for me to see in this offseason would be if Neil Huntington keeps his job, which I don't think right now he should. But if he is told by Bob Nutting, oh, you're still gonna be here, but I will authorize changes beneath you, and you need to be the one to make them. If Neil Huntington said, Larry Broadway ain't cutting it as our farm director, bye. And then I think Broadway is more at fault here. I don't know why, if it's a blind spot or whatever for me. I have a very hard time imagining that Joe Delacari, their scouting director, who's the guy who really conducts the drafts, I have a hard time imagining that he is so bad at identifying talent that they aren't even coming close to getting the right players, that other teams are snickering when the Pirates pick people. Clearly, they're not. Like, Shane Baz, looks like he'll be pretty good someday for a team that knows how to develop. Austin Meadows, Tyler Glasnow, these are players other teams want, right? Garrett Cole is setting records in Houston. The Pirates are not stupid when it comes to identifying, hey, who has talent? I think they know. Where it seems that there is a gap, Imagine if it's railroad tracks, right? And at each point on the tracks, there's a cage, there's every so often there's little milestones. You hit a marker and a little green light goes up if you do it right. Okay, you drafted the right guy. Ding! Between drafting the right guy and that guy making a productive major leaguer out of himself, there is a large chasm where develop the player should be. There is a massive chasm. That is where I think the Pirates fail. It would be very heartening if Neil Huntington said, Larry, here's your walking papers, pal. Like, this isn't working out anymore. And that's why I keep, whenever I bring up the fact that it baffles me that the Los Angeles Dodgers pick later in every round than the Pirates, yet have a better farm system, it's always Larry Broadway that I'm thinking of. I don't know, and it's a job that nobody really thinks consciously about, right? Like, we're not all sitting here trying to go into the nitty-gritty of what Larry Broadway does as farm director. We know it's his purview. He oversees all the development of these players. Whatever he's doing, it's not good enough. There are gaps. Their teaching is bad. Their organizational culture is bad. The Dodgers spend more money on all of this stuff, yes. But you know who probably spends, I would think, maybe more, but a comparable amount of money? The Cardinals. Guys on the Cardinals tend to come up and do what? Produce. Guys on other teams just come up and look like they're ready for it. And I know the Pirates have had, like, Brian, I can't say this and then not mention that Brian Reynolds has been great all year and better than they thought he would be. But why am I only mentioning Brian Reynolds? Why aren't there more Brian Reynolds-type players? Why aren't there more, quote-unquote, organizational depth guys, guys who don't project to have a super high ceiling, who come up and are just not even Brian Reynolds-level good, just good ball players? The Pirates seem to have those in very short supply. Like, every player that comes up from AAA, position player, not even getting into the pitching here, every position player, it seems, most years, that comes up, it's like some tortured affair watching to see whether they can hack it in the big leagues. I don't know about anybody else. When I watch other teams that the Pirates are playing, and it's like, you know, if the Cardinals have some guy named, what would it be, Griffin Canning. I know he's LA's starter tonight. But if Griffin Canning was like a shortstop prospect for the Cardinals, and he was coming up in a pinch because somebody was injured, would you not expect him to hit like two home runs against the Pirates? But more than that, look like he knew exactly what he should be doing on every play. Just look like he comes off of an assembly line of ready-made major league substitutes, right? That's what you would do. You would assume that. When it's the Pirates bringing up somebody, I'm like wondering, am I going to find out that this guy only has 9 toes and can't run properly, but he's made it up to this point? Is the guy going to try to throw to third base when a ground ball gets hit to him and there's nobody on base? Like, is the guy going to stand and block the baseline in a rundown? That's what I'm thinking about when the Pirates are here, and I got to put that on Larry Broadway. Neil Huntington can be as sort of bummed out and contrite as he wants to be, but review of your process, we passed that point a while ago. How about you overhaul the process by firing some people? Fire is a 4-letter word. It is a noun. It's a thing. It's a verb. You can fire someone. It's a 4-letter word, but for the Pirates, it seems to be another kind of 4-letter word. Oh, we don't say that. We're not going to say that one. That's a dirty word. No, fire people that aren't doing their jobs. Neil Huntington could fire Larry Broadway, I presume. I think we're past that point. I think the review process has borne out on the field and in the minor leagues where your system isn't nearly as good and doesn't produce nearly as many ready-made, step-up-to-the-bigs-and-produce players as it should. Okay, top of the hour. I'll give Neil Huntington this. He struck a tone that more fans would want to hear than not. Neil Huntington didn't come off as defiant. Neil Huntington didn't come off as, oh, I've got something to say to you. Neil Huntington came off as a guy whose tail was a little bit between his legs, who on a lot of levels is as frustrated as everybody else, both inside that clubhouse and in the fan base that's had to watch this free fall. What Neil Huntington didn't do was basically finger wag the people who pay money to go watch the team play, like somebody who might be pitching coach Ray Searidge. Let's talk about a guy who doesn't know two things, it seems. How to read the room and how to coach pitchers to be better. You'll hear from Ray Searidge a couple of the things he had to say at the top of the hour. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevy and McMurray. Join Sun Chevy for their all-star open house all month long and open the door to a new Chevy. 65 tonight. Not as humid tomorrow. Clouds and sun, maybe a thunderstorm south of the city. It's a high of 82. What is Ray Searidge doing? What is he saying? What does he think he is accomplishing? We'll try to parse it all and figure it out next.